This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. What is the best football City break? What happens with Cancelo and the best Manchester City dinner party lineup? It's the Coffee Corner. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Ollie McCool.
I'm Joe Butterfield.
And this is the City Report Podcast. Welcome, listeners. Welcome, guys, to another episode of our hopefully soon to become world famous Coffee Corner, the place where we sit down and speak about your listener questions. Guys, we'll get straight into it then. We've had this one from Malcolm. Unfortunately, it wasn't on Twitter, now known as X, because then that would be Malcolm X. But hey, it was in the DMs instead. And they say, The contributors of our esteemed podcast seem to be well-travelled folk. So what would they recommend for the best football city break? As in, not Manchester City, but city as in a city around Europe. Joe, I saw you gallivanting across the continent last week. Yes. I mean, that's a perfect football city break to kick things off.
Yeah, I was in Budapest last week. It's really nice. Like, in terms of like actual city break, it's just great. Like, there's so much stuff to do. It's quite cheap as well, which is always a good combination when it comes to having stuff to do and it also being quite inexpensive. And we went past, like, as you go from the airport into the city, you do pass the Ferenc Varos
Stadium. Yes, it's gorgeous, isn't it?
Which is very nice.
The big eagle, the statue outside it.
Yeah, it's really nice. Like, there's a lot of controversy behind the use of the eagle in Hungary, which you find out if you go around the city. But that's also really interesting as well. So you've got plenty of the culture to take in. My actual number one choice though, and it's one where, because I've not actually, as I do the city breaks, I don't actually go to a lot of football games, but the one where I have been to a football game is Florence, to go see Fiorentina. And I mean, Florence is just my favourite city in the world, full stop. So it's you can't really beat it for me anyway. But going to it, I mean, this is probably true of pretty much every Serie A team, but going to an Italian football match is just, it's great. Mm. Like the whole ultras thing going on at one of the goal ends and sort of having that experience is great. Like I took my girlfriend with me. She actually got dragged along to the game, but she spent most of the game watching the ultras rather than the football, because they're far more entertaining from her point of view. But yeah, really good. And obviously, you know, Italian food, can't beat it. So my vote goes to Florence.
Yeah, Italian football and Italian football culture, I reckon, is the most similar to England whilst also upping the passion levels. I'll share my thought. I mean, this is a question that when I saw it sent through, I absolutely jumped up with excitement because this is really my niche. But Ollie, Joe's put forward Florence. What do you reckon?
Are we sticking to Europe?
honestly, go for it. We can go beyond that.
I think the absolute best one. I mean, I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to get the chance to do it next summer. Buenos Aires. I just think for the biggest of football fans, the football culture, especially South America generally, you go to any of the major cities in Brazil or Argentina, and there's about 10 clubs you can go and see. But, you know, the chance to be in the city of the Superclásico, the biggest football game of all time, I just think it's... And Buenos Aires just looks an insane city. I can't wait to do it myself, but I'll throw out a European one as well. I think every football fan should go to the San Siro in Milan before it comes down.
Yeah,
that is, you know, I think we should probably just say Italian football probably has the best city breaks of them all, because Italy's a great country to go to for anyone. But, you know, as we've said, the passion there for football is just, I think it's almost unrivaled in the rest of Europe, if nearly not the rest of the world. But every football fan should go to the San Siro before it comes down, because I think anyone who doesn't will regret it when you know, Inter or Milan end up playing in another off the rack kind of stadium bowl that we see popping up everywhere. It's going to be such a shame to see that place come down. So I just think Milan has to be number one of everyone's list at the moment.
The only thing I would say about Italian ones, but like European city breaks in general, is going to an evening game that kicks off at 9 PM is really annoying. Like getting like the game ending and being done and dusted at like 11. Yeah. So by the time you're back,
I'll top that. One of the best city breaks football related I did was early this year in Rome. And not only did it start at 9 PM, it was a Europa League game against Feyenoord. Incredible, genuinely incredible game. But it went to extra time and it went to penalties. So it didn't finish until gone midnight, which was, yeah, it was an experience. But I think Milan's up there. San Siro is beautiful. Rome, like I said. Berlin, even though there's not necessarily one, well, there's obviously a couple big teams, Hertha and Union, but there's just those little different clubs around the city. It's a real, you don't necessarily think of Berlin as a football city, but it is massive. I would say, though, my suggestion for this, if anyone wanted to do it, wouldn't necessarily be a city, but the North Rhine-Westphalia region in Germany is probably where you're going to get the highest concentration of the most passionate, the best stadiums, the hardcore supporters in that region. You've got Dusseldorf, you've got Köln, you can even go a little bit further up. You've got Frankfurt, Dortmund are sort of in and around there. Yeah. I'm trying to think of another one. Leverkusen obviously just won the Bundesliga as well. So that sort of part of the world is fantastic. But hey, I'm sure we could go on all day. This is not, unfortunately, a travel podcast, although I think we would enjoy that. We are here to speak about some city questions as well, and we've had plenty. And I wanted to speak about this one in part one from Ali Spears, long-time listener, so shout out Ali. They've asked us, anyone been watching Cancelo lately? Yes, hilarious. What should be done in the summer about him? Ollie, I'll let you kick this one off, because I think City have got a problem. And I guess we can also tie in Calvin Phillips in this conversation loosely, because he's another player who's out on loan that obviously won't be on as big a wages as Cancelo. Cancelo contracted until 2027, I think it is. He's sort of in that bracket of towards the highest earners in the squad. But City probably have a little bit of a problem trying to shift these two players in the summer, I think.
I think they're going to have a harder time shifting Cancelo than they are Phillips. Phillips is a problem in itself. And that's a situation that I think is going to probably roll on throughout the summer. But I would not be surprised if we get to the last couple of days before the deadline day and there's still no market for Cancelo. In terms of a permanent transfer, I think we're going to need Jorge Mendes to absolutely deliver some magic here, because you think about it, he went on loan to Bayern Munich and he started really well, and you know and all the talk was, okay, they're not going to pay the purchase option, but they'll try and negotiate a fee with City. Maybe a player comes in exchange, and then his form fell off a cliff. He ended up whining, being left out of the starting 11, left on the bench, stopped participating at training. Where have we heard that before? And then, you know, he ends up at Barcelona this year, starts really well, and it all goes downhill, but he's still playing. Barcelona aren't going to buy him. Bayern Munich, in all their kind of turmoil, I don't think they're going to come back in for him, even at a cheaper fee. you know, he's done Italy, he's done Spain, he's done England. Who can afford him? You know, unless Chelsea, for example, want to bring in, you know, a more senior player. But then again, that's outside of their kind of what their transfers have been. Unless Arsenal want to take a risk on him, but I don't know why they would. You know, there's no obvious destination for him unless the Saudis come in. And then even then he's going to go, well, no, I'm 29 years old. I'm in what should be my peak years. I don't want to go to Saudi yet. That move's going to be there for me in a few years anyway. That is going to be a huge problem. Phillips, I think, is going to be quite easy in comparison, because I think an English club, you know, whether it's Leeds, if they come back up, take a chance on a loan deal that suits them, or, you know, Newcastle, you know, he's used the May quote there for Bruno Guimaraes or something. I think there's more opportunities for Phillips, even with how horrific his season has been, because clubs will take the opportunity to have a reset with him in the summer. But for Cancelo, I can't see a market for him at all.
It's an interesting one, isn't it, Joe? Because we take the timeline back. God, it's going on 18 months now when he originally left City, and it came sort of out of nowhere, even though we now know the undercurrent had been sort of bubbling away for a little bit with his attitude and his sort of annoyance at the playing time. But as Ollie says, he's kind of burned every possible bridge in Europe, and I would not be surprised if we see him rock up at Arsenal or somewhere in the Premier League. Saying that, though, the PSR rules and regulations, which also, to bring it full circle, plays into the problem City have, because how do they justify a £60 million signing, something like that? Yeah. Obviously, it was part of the Danilo deal. The big one is the wages, isn't it? And getting him off the books has to be seen as a priority, but it's just not going to be easy.
So with Barcelona, is he actually falling out with everyone, or is he just being bad for this last?
He's just been cataclysmically. Yeah, because
I've seen that in the Champions League and particularly the Clásico over the weekend, he's been pretty susceptible for a lot of goals that have been conceded. I just think I see a world. Obviously, the problem is that I think Barcelona would probably be okay with taking him. Not for the money that we're, you know, I think it's at 40 mil their buyout that they've got. They're never paying that. Like that's just off the table. Nobody's paying 40 mil for Cancelo. But I think the problem that Barcelona have is that I don't think they can spend 10 or 20 mil on him. I think their finances this summer, we say this every year, but their finances this summer just look like surely their priority is not Cancelo in the transfer window, like with how things are looking. But I don't. I think realistically, Cancelo and Phillips, I don't think we'll sell either of them personally ever. I think they're going to just be permanent loans until their contracts run out.
Until 2045, they're just going to keep renewing the contracts. It's going to be
until they're going to keep riding that gravy train until the legs give up on them. I think Cancelo in particular. How long has he got left in his deal? Is it 2 or 3 years?
It's till 2027. His renewal, his renewal was what, like 6 months or the 12 year, months the before summer he actually before left he bailed. It, yeah.
So I think I think Cancelo's just one that, unless he accepts that Saudi is the only place he's going to get a permanent move, I think we're just going to be bouncing him from loan to loan until like the end of his contract, because I can't see we as a club are doing what we do with a lot of our players, to be honest, that we do want to get rid of, where we put a valuation on them that's so high that nobody will pay it, and then we give people all the, we'll loan him out with an option to buy at the end. But the option to buy at the end, and we'll do the same with Calvin Phillips as well, we'll loan him to Leeds with an option to buy of like 40 mil, and they'll get to the end of the season. And even if Leeds stay up, they will not pay that. And it's the same with Cancelo. He'll get to the end of whatever his next loan is, even if it goes down in fractions of like 10 mil each time. So his next loan will be a 30 mil buyout. Whichever club it is that takes him will not pay that at the end of the at the end, because if his attitude holds up, his form, as we know, will almost certainly not for a whole season. Like he has when Cancelo's great, he's amazing. When he's bad, he is absolutely terrible, as Barcelona are finding out in this last 2 weeks. So I just feel like I think he's just going to be in limbo with us for a while. I think it's going to be at least a couple of years. Maybe it'll get to the point where he has 1 year left in his deal and we just go, right, please, somebody take him off us for like 10, 15 million and somebody takes a punt on him. But even then, he'll be 31, 32. Mm. So that becomes a whole problem then on its own as well. I don't know. Cancelo is just such a strange prospect to get rid of. As Ollie says, Calvin Phillips seems a little bit more straightforward because he's English. He's got some, you know, he's got some previous experience with England and stuff like that that still makes him. Yeah, although this West Ham loan has done him absolutely no favors either. But a year with Leeds where he looks something like his old self might get his stock back up to the point where we could sell him again. But Cancelo, I just don't see it.
It is interesting. I'm just looking on Sportrack now, which is a decent database for player salaries, but it's a bit hard when the player's been loaned out because you don't know what sort of percentage is being split with the club and the parent club, etc. It seems to be saying that Cancelo's on a base salary of £13 million pounds per year, which is an awful lot of money for a guy who just simply seems allergic to defending. But that'd put him on a par at the moment with John Stones in the City in the City squad, which is more than Phil Foden. It's more than Rodri at the moment. God, it's more than Ruben Diaz. It would actually be, I'm just looking now, it'd be top five highest earners in the City squad, which is just,
if that's true, then yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to criticise the hindsight here because at the time when he got the extension, he was one of the best players in the world, not only just best defender, best fullback. You know, his 21-22 season was sensational. Ollie's just done that. MC Ollie has just done the maths and it's looking like £250,000 per week. And Ollie looks like visibly shocked at that discovery, which is understandable. But yeah, it's hard to criticise because he was so good at the time. But I'd be interested to see what they do. I'll tell you what, we'll chuck one more question in before we go to the break because I want to make sure there's a couple questions in part two that, you know, deserve a little bit of time. So we'll get this one done quickly. Ollie, it comes from Dave, 0161, Manny on the map, new kit. What's that about? I've paraphrased there just because we are, you know, want to get this done quickly, but dear me, Puma have had a shocker, haven't they?
We've had a really good couple of years with Puma where we thought they finally cracked it. They know how to make a City kit that people want. And then they just go back to doing this crap. It's so annoying. It's just going to it's one of those things. It'll look great on the players. And then you'll see Barry 55, who stands in the South Stand every week, wearing it in triple XL, You know, some bloke who wears it and you go, oh my God, he's an absolute Puma. It's too
Poor
late
Barry.
To think again, but think
Poor
again,
Barry.
My God.
Someone called Barry's listening to this podcast now thinking, what are you saying my name for?
Dave, that wasn't aimed at you. Barry, I'm sorry. But back to Dave's question, Joe. I'm not a fan of this gimmick, and that's what it is, isn't it? It's a gimmick. We've seen it sort of pop up in popular culture the last couple of years, specifically music, the sort of 0161 trying to reference Manchester and stuff like that. Why don't they just stick a big bottle of Vimto on the back if they wanted to do that? I mean, it'd look better, in my opinion, anyway.
The superior Manc drink, the Vimto. It's the
absolutely.
Take that, Ribena. I really what Puma have done with their kits with us for like has been really good. I think since they've taken over, like, it seems like every single one that they've done, or at least the vast majority of them, will ignore the one that obviously had Man City written on it on the front in there, that horrific one. But the rest of them have all had like a nod to Manchester that's been quite subtle, and it's been like, you know, with the the bridge pattern on like one of the away kits from a while ago. Like there was the Paisley one. There's, you know, the one we've got this season is obviously the throwback to the year we moved into the Etihad. It looks like one of the kits for next year is the 25 year anniversary of the 99 season. Like the 25 years since it happened in 99. Like there's they've always got something that is a subtle enough hit, well, not subtle enough in the sense of this third kit that's coming up that is literally just a carbon copy of that 25 year ago one. But you know, there's something that's in there that you can go, oh, it's all obviously marketing guff in it when they say like, oh, we've taken this from the bridges of Castlefield and we've put it as part of the, you know, this is the great heritage of the industrial age of Manchester.
The paving stones outside the Arndale.
Exactly, yeah. And it's just, and you look at that and you just think, oh, come on, like, give it a rest. But I think putting 0161 on the collar and the sleeves is just far too on the nose for anyone. I actually quite like the colour of the kit. I don't mind the blue. I don't mind the navy trim, but I just do mind the 0161 that's in there. And as Ollie says, it'll look great on play. Like Ruben Diaz will put that on, and I'll think, you know what? Maybe it's not actually that bad. And then, yeah, I'll see one in a shop, and I'll think, yeah, I'm not putting that on. I refuse. Mm. But yeah. Thankfully, the away kit and the third kit look all right, but I will not be touching that home one, I don't think.
Mm. I don't know if this is us just getting old, but 0161 area code was introduced in 1995, which. I mean, I personally wasn't born, but it doesn't
Who
seem like
Who has landlines now? Landlines
exactly,
are not a thing anymore.
Exactly. I just really don't get it. And I guess I'm not the sort of person it's aimed towards, which is fine, but dear me. Anyway, that'll do for part one. We got through three questions there. There'll be more after the break. So listeners, stay exactly where you are. We'll be back in a moment.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. This is, in fact, Coffee Corner, getting my CO words mixed up there. Okay, let's press on because, like I said, we have had plenty of questions. If you want to be featured in one of these episodes, please feel free to either drop us a message on social media or you can DM either me, Adam, your favourite podcast contributor, which is obviously going to be me. Anyway, we've had this one from @WillMCFC49, and I think it's really interesting to take stock of this now because, Ollie, we are 7 matches until the end of the season. The tiniest of tiny benefits from getting knocked out of the Champions League is we know what City's schedule looks like now. We can look at the fixture list and we know it's going to end on May 25th. It's going to be a final against United. Before that, we've got 6 Premier League matches, win them all, City are champions. It is that simple. But the question from WillMCFC49 reads, what do you think about our season, guys? Though I don't want to assume, however, hypothetically speaking, if we end up losing both the trophies, FA Cup and Premier League, of course, where would our situation be this season? They said they're a big fan of the show. Shout out, WillMCFC49. Really appreciate that. Ollie, it's an interesting question, isn't it? Because City is still on for a double. Everyone would have taken that at the start of the season. That includes the Premier League as well. But it feels like slowly but surely, I don't know, this season hasn't felt necessarily like it's been one of those City seasons, which could still end up in 2 trophies. We'll have to wait and see.
Right, I'm just going to start off with the if. If City win the Premier League, they don't deserve it. They just don't. I just don't think City have been anywhere near consistent enough to celebrate it. I'll celebrate it even more if we do win it. They've done very well in 2024 to be unbeaten for so long. Keeping Rodri's unbeaten streak is fantastic. And, you know, maybe if he hadn't had suspension against Nottingham Forest, things would be very different. Things could have been very different this season. You know, if we come out of this season with 2 trophies, it's objectively a very, very good season. Any season in which you win the league title is a very good season. But, you know, if City come out of this season having lost both of them, their only real disappointment can be losing the final to United. You know, the FA Cup, it's knockout football. Anything can happen.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's a totally fair assessment. I'm probably not as harsh on City's Premier League title credentials, Joe. I think if the team that wins the league deserves to win the league, regardless of what sort of has gone before it. But I take the point that City haven't necessarily shown their standard of league winning form. It's probably been a bit more pre-Pep league win. And I think that'll be the case for whoever wins it. I would say Arsenal have probably been the more consistent team. I don't necessarily buy the fact that Liverpool have been better than City. I just think they've had this sort of, I don't know, they've been running on momentum a little bit too much for my money, but hey, that's as good as a sort of a skill set in football if you can harness it. But I do feel like there's a possibility that City maybe peter out this season and they do go trophyless. There's a possibility City go on a mad tear and they win the next seven games. I guess there's just been no evidence from before this sort of point in the campaign to suggest either way. It's going to be telling, isn't it, in the next sort of month or so to see what happens.
Yeah, I think the ultimate thing that could go wrong this season is no trophies. Like, and obviously people can say, oh, well, you won the Super Cup and the Club World Cup, and like those are not trophies that I'm counting as this season's. Like, they are packaged in with the treble, in my opinion. They're not things we've won this season.
They're accessories.
I think I mentioned in the group chat the other day, they're like the European and world community shields, which I don't think
they would be the sponsors. If McDonald's is a sponsor for the community shield, what are we having as the world sponsor?
Oh my god. The European Subway or something like that. It'd be something really, like Americanized and just awful. Yeah. But I think in terms of, I think if we don't win either of the Premier League or the FA Cup, that will be in my mind like a failure of which I think is, given the position that we're now in with the league. Like I kind of take the point that we've not been great this season. I've certainly been on that gravy train myself of saying that, you know, City have not looked like they deserve to win. It's kind of why the Champions League getting knocked out against Madrid last week didn't really concern me, because I never at any point this season looked at us and thought, this is a team that's going to win the Champions League, because we've been defensively very fragile all season, and that typically doesn't lead to winning the Champions League. However, on the other hand, so I was watching I watched the treble documentary over the last week or two, and that kind of reminded me that the first half of that season was not, before the World Cup, like that season was not great. Like it was, we had like a pretty significant run of poor results in that season. And you could maybe this time last season, we might've been looking, obviously this time last season, we were looking at a genuine treble. Like we had it was looking really good. But maybe now it's easy to say that we don't look as good because we have been knocked out of the Champions League. I think that's just made this season look a little bit worse than it was. But I don't think especially in the unbeaten run we've been on in the league, like that is impressive. Like I think it's a bit of a strange unbeaten run, because basically every good team we've come against in that run we've drawn with. But it's been an
Arsenal 2003-04 unbeaten run,
yeah,
hasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. But then I think Arsenal have only really been consistent over that 2 or 3 months where they were battering everyone 4 or 5-0, because they were playing against teams, with the exception of maybe Liverpool and Newcastle, who are lower down the table and they should be beating. Liverpool have just been, you know, going a goal down and somehow fighting back for far too long of the season for them to even remotely deserve it if they win the league. But yeah, if we don't win the league or the FA Cup, if we end this season trophyless, it will be a failure, and it will also reflect very badly on last summer's recruitment and the outgoings, as Ollie said, with, you know, Gundogan and Mahrez going and not getting in true like quality replacements to replace them, who could just step in ready made. But also, if we win it, then we've fully deserved it, because it's come to the crucial point of the season now, and City are becoming the winning machine again in the league when it gets to this point. And we're seeing Arsenal and Liverpool have blinked. They're showing they can drop points, and we just got to hope that, you know, watching the treble documentary, knowing what Pep's like in the dressing room at this point of the season, I do not have any concerns over the next 6 games or so. I think the exception of Spurs, but I'm really hoping that Arsenal and Liverpool have dropped points again by that point, and hopefully that game won't be the deciding factor for the league. And maybe if it does, maybe then we just go and win away at Spurs because we've got something truly riding on it. But I'm absolutely in no way am I saying that that's going to happen, because I hate that ground. But
yeah, it's gearing up for that, I think, isn't it? After all of the mistakes and the mishaps City have had this season and the success last year and the heartache this year, perceived heartache, I guess, is gearing up for a showdown against Tottenham Hotspur, where City have to win to sort of maybe not even keep the title hopes alive. Maybe they go there and they win the league. Wouldn't that be something? It'd be interesting to see if it's between City and Arsenal what sort of mood the Tottenham Hotspur fans are in that day and the sort of the atmosphere inside the ground. If, I don't know, even a point wins City the league and you'd have Tottenham fans probably cheering on City, which would be a weird example. But yeah, I don't know. I just have this. And it will come as no surprise to anybody who's listened to a long time. But I have this sort of dread and fear and feel that City maybe could not unravel, but, well, yeah, I guess unravel. That's kind of how the season's gone. And they've suddenly found themselves six games from the end of the season needing to win all six to win the Premier League title, which you'd have absolutely taken. But given the way things have gone for City this season, I don't know. It doesn't necessarily feel like they've got that end of season vibe yet. I think 21-22 when they went out of the, oh no, sorry, 18-19 when they went out of the Champions League against Tottenham Hotspur, that sort of freed up the calendar and City started really getting into gear then, focusing on the Premier League. Maybe it will be the same again, I'm not too sure, but we'll be there all the way, as Pep says. We will be there. Final question then, and it's a bit of a fun one. It comes from our very own Joe Ricci, and they ask us, you get one night out on the town with a goalkeeper, defender, midfielder, and attacker, plus a member of the coaching staff, which I think most of us could probably put down as Brandon the Kitman already. I think that's pretty much confirmed. They can be from any City team ever. Who are you picking and why? I tell you what, let's split this up. Ollie, you can take goalkeeper. Joe, you take defender. I'll take midfielder and then we can convene for the attacker. So we've got a night out, I'm guessing, in Manchester. Why not? With four players, one member of the coaching staff. We'll chuck ourselves in there as well. We've already got Brandon. Ollie, between the sticks from any City team ever, let's, you know, for the purpose of this, let's say they're still alive. Be great to have knocked about with Bert Trautman, but, you know... Who are you going to pick?
Yeah, I'm sure Bert Trautman was a great night out in the 1950s. No, I think it comes down to two. It comes down to Joe Hart or Shea Given. Edison, I love him. He's mental. Mm. But I also don't want, you know... Actually, no. I'm going to take that back. Scott Carson, obviously.
I was just going to say, yeah, thank God you said Scott Carson.
I was going to say Shea Given because he's Irish, or Joe Hart because he seems like a good laugh. And then I remembered Scott Carson is the ultimate... No, Scott Carson, absolutely. And, you know, he's the sort of guy that even if he stayed sober, he'd still be incredibly funny and he'd make sure you get home safe.
Yeah, I think it was Rio Ferdinand, wasn't it, last week, who, after speaking to Jude PR Bellingham, said something along the lines of, oh, this is the sort of guy you want your daughter to bring home, which not only was really weird, but also just like very cringy as well at the same time. But yeah. I think Scott Carson's probably the ideal man. So Scott Carson goes in there. I reckon Joe Hart would have probably been the sort of guy who just sort of does really weird shit. Probably hyped up on like Alco Pops and like has two WKDs and just starts, I don't know, sliding
Harlem
about
shake.
Yeah, big Harlem shake vibes. So yeah, I think Scott Carson's probably the best shot there. Joe, you're taking up defenders, and there's been a few nutcases the years, so this will be an interesting pick.
Kyle Walker. No, I'm not saying no. No, I'm not doing that. The other, I'm being interesting. Nights, I lived in a jail cell. Wouldn't it, by the end of the night. I think.
the opinion of the City Report podcast.
I'd end up in a jail cell because I've done something, not Kyle Walker. I think the obvious one that a lot of people will be thinking, is Micah Richards, but I don't have time for someone just shouting big Meeks all night and just like, and just, you know, getting really loud and leery. So I think I might go. Maybe it's just because I love him, but I think I might go Pablo Zabaleta. I just think he's great in it. I just love to just be able to just stare at him all night and just tell him that he's great. And that'd be fantastic. But he also, to be fair, he also does seem like a very good laugher. I'm just thinking back to the way that I always judge these is based on the postseason, like the the trophy parade celebrations and stuff like that. And just Zabaleta just always looked like he was, I mean, to be fair, everybody looks like a great laugh on these kind of tours. But if it's not going to be Zabaleta, it's got to be John Stones. Just having him just do a Jamaican accent all night long as he's prone to do.
Drinker though. I don't know. Who was it? Was it Kyle Walker? Maybe on Rio Ferdinand's podcast, actually, was speaking about this. And he said that John Stones in the season doesn't drink, but when he does at the end of the campaign for the celebrations, he goes for it.
Yeah, I imagine that's probably the case for a lot of the guys. Like if you've basically got to get through a whole season knowing that you're going to be in training pretty much like 80% of the time the next day, you probably aren't going to drink that much, are you? So that one chance at the end of the season when you just have that big blowout afterwards is going to be the time in it where you just do it. But yeah, it's either Zabaleta or John Stones, and I think either one I would just end up looking dreamily at them all night long because both are wonderful looking men.
Yeah, and maybe my suggestion would help towards that, because I was having a look through and I reckon it's probably the tamest position for people sort of in this category. Rodri, you know, I'd like to have a night doing my accounts and working through sort of the tax return with him, but I don't necessarily think he'd be one for a big blowout. Kevin De Bruyne, maybe. Fernandinho, maybe, but they don't necessarily give off those vibes. I'm going to go David Silva. Reportedly loved a little tipple often. Yeah. You know, he's the finest of the wines and whatnot, so maybe he wouldn't be necessarily best suited to, I don't know, where we go in.
I never realized that he was apparently quite renowned for being a bit of a party animal when he was at Valencia before he joined City. I don't know if just being in a foreign country just made him stop, or if he was actually still quite bad for it for the first year or two of him being at City, but it feels like by the time he was done with us,
well,
he was very much a bit of one of the more, I don't know, level-headed, mature players.
Yeah, I mean, and Mike Richards, you know, so, you know, debatable source there. You know, you never know what he's embellishing. But, you know, he's had many stories of David Silva on pre-season tours being an absolute pisshead, apparently.
He was
absolutely crazy for it, especially in the early Mancini years on the US tours. Apparently he was well up for it. So if I had midfield, I would have said David Silva, because I just want to see if that's true or not. Either way, you're getting a night out with David Silva where you just get to kind of look at anything that's ever existed, or he's an actually good lad.
Are we just going to end up staring at every single person we take on this night out and just be like, you're mint, you, just like all night long?
Yeah. So we've got Brandon the Kitman, we've got Scott Carson, John Stones and David Silva. What a turnout this is. Ollie, any quick fire suggestions for the attacker? I think that's probably a loose term, but we can throw in wingers, we can throw in strikers. I guess Jack Grealish is the front runner for this one, in terms of people that you'd sort of say could potentially be a good one. Maybe a dark horse for Mario Balotelli.
Speaking
of getting into some hairy situations, maybe he would be a good pick.
See, I think the thing with Jack Grealish, he kind of seems the obvious pick. He's a bit too insane, isn't he?
You need a week off, don't you?
I don't know how he does it and then, you know, can look normal on the front page of the paper a couple of days later. I really do not know how he does it. But if that is the type of night out we're going for, then get him in. Mario, I think, would be the pick, because who wouldn't want someone, as we all know the stories of Mario, but, you know, in the same way that we're saying with all these, we just like to stare at them. I'd just like to observe Mario Balotelli. I'd just like to see what he does, because whatever he's going to do, it's going to be funny. Get him on. But I think it's got to be Mario.
My vote's going to go to Mario as well. I'm trying to think of any sort of, like, I think a pretty rogue one. And again, I'm just thinking back to like the old like inside City days and stuff like that. John Guidetti always seemed like a really good laugh. Like he always seemed like a really on the preseason, like the preseason video vlogs that they used to do back in the day. He seemed like he was great fun. Mm. I think John Guidetti could be good. But other than, you know, realistically, there's only one winner here, isn't there? It's either Jack Grealish, but I think he's too obvious, or Mario Balotelli.
Bump into him anyway, won't you? You'd see him about two or three hours.
He'd be there somewhere.
Yeah, rightly so as well. I'm trying to think of any sort of honourable mentions from the past. Andy Morrison, I reckon. I don't know what his sort of his social life is like, but he was a nutcase on the pitch, so I imagine he'd probably translate that over into sort of going out and stuff like that. But yeah, so what did we end up on there? Scott Carson, Mario Balotelli, Brandon the Kit Man, David Silva, and the defender was John Stones.
John Stones, of course.
So I reckon that's a cracking night out. And if anyone's from City's listening, sort us out. That'd make for some good content, wouldn't it? Listeners, thank you very much. Apologies if we didn't get through one of your questions. Like I said, we've had plenty and we've been rambling on for the best part of an hour now. So we'll call it a day there. But chaps, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Listeners, thank you very much. And until next time, we'll see you later. Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.